All right, welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're going to be jumping into a case that's, well, it's a bit of a classic. It's definitely a must-know for anybody working with or studying government contracts. And that case is Lisbon Contractors, Inc. versus the United States. So we've, dug up all the documents, the case briefs, some really good legal analysis on this one, even pulled together some of our own notes. And the mission here, so to speak, is to kind of, you know, sift through all that legal jargon, you know what I mean? And try to get to, like, the core of why this case, why it still matters today, especially when you're thinking about, what happens when the government decides to terminate a contract, and specifically a termination for default.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, this case goes back to the 1980s, so it might seem a little, you know, dated on the surface, but it really does still have a lot of relevance, you know, today in 2025. And, you know, at its core, it really boils down to a pretty fundamental question, something that anyone who's either, studying law, working with government contracts, really needs to have a solid grasp of. And that question is basically, you know, when the government decides to, let's say, pull the plug on a contract, you know, they claim the contractors failed to deliver, you know, who has the burden of actually proving that?
Right, right. Absolutely. And I think, you know, before we get too far into the weeds here, let's kind of, you know, set the scene a little bit. Lisbon Contractors, they had this contract with the U.S. Soil Conservation Service, the SES, and it was to build, I believe it was a flood control channel and a bridge, if I'm not mistaken. Sounds simple enough, but, well, I think it's safe to say things didn't quite go according to plan.
Yeah, no, not exactly. Right from the get-go, the project hit some snags, some roadblocks. Lisbon's concrete subcontractor, Versatile Constructors, they started having some, difficulties. And there were also, some issues with the on-site supervision, at least initially from Lisbon's side. And as you might expect, you know, this all led to some delays. The project started falling behind schedule.
Okay, yeah. So the project's behind. And I think, you know, for our listeners out there who are maybe just getting their feet wet with contract law, you know, you come across this phrase termination for default. It's it carries a lot of weight, right?
Yeah.
There's some serious implications there. It's not just the same thing as, you know, the government saying, hey, we've changed our minds. We don't need this project anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a crucial distinction to understand. You know, with the termination for default, it's basically the government saying, you know, you, the contractor, you've messed up. You haven't lived up to your end of the deal. And that can have some pretty, pretty big negative consequences for a contractor. You know, they could be held liable for all sorts of costs, you know, the government's expenses to go out and hire someone else to finish the work, all of that. In contrast, termination for convenience, that's when the government decides, you know, we don't need this anymore, we're pulling out. But, usually in that case, the contractor, they're entitled to get paid for all the costs they incurred up to that point.
Right, right. So, you know, very different situations, very different outcomes.
Yeah.
So before we, dive into the specifics of what went down with Lisbon, I know you'd mentioned, you know, this key question of burden of proof. And I think it's worth taking a minute to kind of touch on the, you know, the broader legal context here,
yeah.
You know, the big picture. And I know the Contract Disputes Act, that's got to be a big part of this conversation, right?
Yeah, definitely. The Contract Disputes Act, the CDA, that's a key piece of legislation here, along with, you know, the relevant sections of the Federal Acquisition Regulation, the FAR. You know, those kind of provide the framework, the ground rules for how government contracts are supposed to work. And, what happens when there are disagreements, including how terminations are handled. And it's within that framework that the Lisbon case, it really established this crucial legal principle that that I think is so important to understand.
Okay, yeah, let's get into that. What's the, you know, the big takeaway, the key principle that Lisbon established when it comes to, you know, who has to prove what in these situations?
Sure, sure. So the central principle that came out of Lisbon, and this is really vital, is that the government, they have the burden of proving, and I emphasize proving, that the contractor was actually in default. They can't just, you know, point to missed deadlines and call it a day. It's on them, the government, to actually demonstrate that the contractor didn't meet their obligations, and importantly, that there was no reasonable likelihood that they could have completed the project on time. And that burden of proof, that doesn't magically shift over to the contractor just because, you know, the project's running a little behind.
Right, right. So it's not just about, you know, saying, hey, you're late, you're in default. There's got to be something more substantial. There's some real evidence. Now, I remember reading something about a reasonable belief standard, something like that. Does that ring a bell?
Yes, exactly. And that actually comes from General Provision 5 of the contract itself, which the court, they looked at very closely. And that provision, it says that the government, they need to show a reasonable belief that there was no reasonable likelihood of the contractor being able to, you know, get everything done within the time they had left. So think of it this way, you know, they don't need a crystal ball, you know, to say with absolute certainty that the contractor is going to fail. But it's also got to be more than just a hunch, a gut feeling, right? They need solid reasons, solid evidence to support that belief that, you know, timely completion was unlikely. It's not about proving, you know, absolute impossibility, but it is about having, you know, a well-founded belief based on the circumstances, based on the facts, you know, at the time they made that decision to terminate.
Okay, that makes sense. So, you know, let's get back to the Lisbon case itself, the timeline. So, you know, the contract's awarded, I think it was August of 79, if I remember right, and then the completion date, it was extended to December 20th, 1980, I believe, and then all this stuff with the subcontractor starts happening and the delays. So can you kind of walk us through those critical events that ultimately led to that termination for default?
Sure. So yeah, we had those initial problems with Versatile Constructors, and then there were, you know, kind of ongoing discussions back and forth between Lisbon and the SCS, you know, about how the project was progressing. Was it meeting the, you know, the quality standards? You know, Lisbon, they were trying to, you know, address the government's concerns. They took pretty big step. They replaced Versatile Constructors with a whole new subcontractor. They also brought in a new acting superintendent to kind of, you know, get things back on track and make sure things were running smoothly. But, you know, despite these efforts by Lisbon, you know, that revised completion date, it was still looming. And the SCS, they decided to terminate the contract for default on April 30th, 1980.
Wow. So, you know, sounds like Lisbon was really, you know, making a good faith effort to fix the problems, which that seems like a pretty important detail. Now, when the case went to court, you know, what were the government's main arguments? You know, why did they think that that default termination was, you know, the right call? And maybe even more importantly, you know, why did the court ultimately disagree with them?
Yeah, so the government's main argument was basically, you know, look at all these delays that have already happened. Look at those early performance issues with the subcontractor. This all clearly shows, you know, Lisbon's not going to be able to finish this project on time. But, you know, the court, they weren't convinced. A big part of their decision was that the government, they didn't really present any, you know, hard evidence that directly showed Lisbon wouldn't be able to finish the work. You know, there was no study, no formal assessment by the SCS to analyze, you know, how much work was actually left to be done, how long it would realistically take Lisbon to complete it, especially now that they had, you know, a new subcontractor, a new superintendent, you know, things had changed.
So it wasn't enough for the government to just point to the past and say, see, they've had problems. They're going to keep having problems. They needed some kind of, you know, forward-looking analysis, some evidence that completion was, you know, truly unlikely.
Exactly. And the court, you know, they specifically highlighted that the government didn't offer any, you know, direct testimony or any other kind of direct evidence that actually estimated how much time Lisbon would need to complete the contract, you know, at the point when the termination happened. And, you know, going even further, the court actually said that, you know, Lisbon appointing a new superintendent, submitting that revised schedule, those were positive steps. Those were good things. In the court's view, you know, that showed that Lisbon was serious about getting the project back on track. And because the government, you know, they didn't successfully prove that Lisbon had no reasonable likelihood of completing the project on time, you know, at the time the termination was issued, well, the court also dismissed their counterclaim for the costs they incurred to hire a replacement contractor. You know, those re-procurement costs, they didn't get those either.
Wow. So it sounds like Lisbon really got a, you know, a pretty big win there on that whole, you know, wrongful termination issue. But I do remember reading that, you know, they didn't get all the money they were asking for, all the costs they were trying to recover.
Yeah, that's right. And that's actually, you know, it's a really important nuance to understand here. So, you know, the court agreed the termination was wrong. It should have been a termination for convenience. And that means, you know, Lisbon was entitled to get certain costs back, you know, costs they incurred. But, you know, they didn't get everything they asked for. And the reason for that was the court found that Lisbon's documentation, you know, for some of their claimed costs, it just wasn't good enough. It wasn't sufficient. And that actually highlights a really critical principle in contract law, which is that even if the government messes up, even if they wrongly terminate the contract, you know, the contractor, they still have to prove their costs. They have to be able to back up those claims.
So even though the government made the mistake, Lisbon still needed to have all their ducks in a row, so to speak, all their financial records, you know, organized and ready to go if they wanted to get reimbursed.
Exactly. Exactly. The court was, you know, very clear about that. They emphasized this legal principle of mitigation of damages. You know, so for example, if Lisbon had, you know, materials left over, materials that were meant for the project, they had to, you know, account for those. What was their value? Could they be salvaged? Could they be used for something else? They couldn't just, you know, say, oh, we spent this much on materials, give us all that money back, without explaining, you know, what happened to those materials.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, you know, zooming out a bit, thinking about the bigger picture here, what are the, you know, the really key takeaways from Lisbon Contractors, you know, for someone who's, you know, studying government contract law, for example? What are the practical implications that are, you know, still relevant today in, you know, in the world of government contracting?
Well, I think there are a few, you know, really important lessons to take away from this. You know, first and foremost, it's that principle we've been talking about. You know, the government, they have the burden of proof. They got to prove the contractor is in default. Just missing deadlines, that's not enough. They got to actually show with evidence that the contractor was incapable of finishing the work within a reasonable time frame. And, you know, second, this case really highlights the importance of good documentation, you know, detailed contemporaneous documentation. And that goes for both the contractor and the government. Contractors, they need to keep good records of, you know, their progress, the challenges they face, and the steps they take to fix those challenges. You know, kind of like what Lisbon did with the subcontractor and the superintendent. And those up-to-date schedules, you know, records of communication with the contracting officer, all that stuff, it can be really crucial evidence if a dispute ends up in court.
So you're saying, you know, if Lisbon had kept better track of their costs, you know, more detailed records, maybe they could have gotten more of that money back.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, for the government, this case is like, you know, a big warning sign. It's saying, hey, you can't just terminate a contract for default based on a feeling or because of past problems. You need a solid reason supported by real evidence, you know, showing that the contractor can't finish the job. You know, before you even think about terminating, you know, maybe take some time to really assess the situation, how much work is left, can the contractor actually do it? You know, that would be a much smarter approach. And third, you know, the fact that the court, you know, they liked that Lisbon tried to fix things, that they hired a new subcontractor, a new superintendent, you know, that shows that taking proactive steps, you know, trying to resolve problems, that can go a long way. The courts look at that favorably.
Yeah. It's like they were, you know, they were taking ownership of the situation, trying to make things right.
Exactly. Exactly. And it wasn't just, you know, lip service. They were actually taking concrete actions. And then, you know, I think this case also provides some really important clarity on, you know, what that reasonable likelihood standard actually means in practice. So the court was clear, you know, the government doesn't have to prove that it was absolutely impossible for the contractor to finish the project. But, you know, it's got to be more than just, you know, a theoretical possibility. You know, there has to be a reasonable evidence-based belief that they can actually get it done within the time they have left on the contract. And that distinction, that's really important to understand, you know, what the government has to show, what they have to prove before they can, you know, rightfully terminate a contract for default. And finally, you know, the principles that came out of Lisbon, they're still shaping how we interpret termination clauses in government contracts today, how contractors and the government, how they approach negotiations. It's, you know, it's fundamental knowledge for anyone in this field.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah.
This has been a really great deep dive. I mean, it's amazing how a case from, you know, decades ago can still be so relevant.
Yeah.
You know, it just shows you how complex government contracting really is. And it's not just about the, you know, the engineering, the building, all that, the legal stuff, the administrative side.
Yeah.
That's just as important.
Oh, absolutely. And it really reinforces that, you know, in this field, understanding who has to prove what, you know, having the evidence, the documentation to back up your position, that's absolutely crucial. And it doesn't matter if you're the contractor or the government, it's, you know, that's got to be there.
Yeah. Couldn't agree more. So as we wrap up our deep dive into Lisbon Contractors, I wanted to leave our listeners with something to think about. You know, we talked about how the government, they didn't really do a good job of proving that Lisbon couldn't finish the project. You know, they didn't have that forward-looking analysis. And that was a big reason why they lost the case. So here's a question. You know, the court put so much emphasis on that burden of proof. So what if, you know, before they decided to terminate the contract, what if the government had hired a like a scheduling expert, you know, someone to really analyze the project, see if it was even viable, you know. How do you think that might have changed things? Do you think the outcome might have been different? And, you know, what does that tell us about, you know, being proactive, managing contracts well, and, you know, even getting expert opinions when things start to go sideways and termination is on the table? It's definitely something to consider, something to think about. You know, as always, thanks for joining us on the Deep Dive.
Thanks for having me.